Welcome on this dark winter night into the warm circle of love, where we seek to grow in love and be in service to it in every way to help us to enlarge the circle so that more and more people can be included. Every moment a child is born is a holy moment. Each infant that comes into the world needs love that affirms their goodness and provides them with every opportunity to grow into its offering. On this Christmas Eve, we gather to celebrate the birth of Jesus, who grew into one of the boldest models of love humanity has known. We gather to celebrate the light within each of us that guides us on the path of loving kindness and the power it brings to heal a broken world, a world broken by greed, fear, and mean-spiritedness. Let us be the wise men and women who see the shining star of hope and deliver its message of universal love to all life, the four-leggeds, the six-leggeds, those without legs, those with wings, the trees and grasses and great and small waterways, the earth, our holy mother, the wind swirling from every corner, the sun and moon and the sky filled with stars. Let us be good and generous stewards of this precious gift of life. Let us gather in awe and gratitude. Welcome, everybody.
Good evening. This season is to celebrate the birth of a baby boy who would grow up to teach others to love everyone, especially those who need help the most. Regardless of your theological beliefs, this is a beautiful message that can be embraced by all. For me, this season brings an extra joy, the birth of my son. I almost didn't have Jake. As I was trying to get pregnant, and the first few tries didn't take, I realized that if I tried in April, and it worked, that baby's birthday would be right around Christmas. I told my mom I didn't want to try that month because I didn't want to have a kid whose birthday was right next Christmas or on Christmas. But she convinced me that a child is a blessing regardless of when their birthday is and that their birth overshadows all other holidays. She couldn't have been more correct. The April attempt to get pregnant worked, and Jake's due date was December 25th. Thankfully, he came a few days later on the 28th, but he was still the best Christmas present I could have ever asked for. Loving a child puts life into perspective. You learn to focus on what's really important and to let the small stuff go. According to the stories, motherhood was sprung on Mary when she wasn't expecting it. I, on the other hand, wanted to be a mother and planned for it, doing what was necessary to make it happen, even when that meant doing it alone. Being a mother is not about what you gave up to have a child, but what you've gained from having one. There is a children's book that makes me cry every time I read it. It's called Love You Forever, and it tells the story of a mother's love for her son as he grows from a baby to a man and becomes a father himself. There is a phrase throughout the book that resonates with me so much. It goes, I'll love you forever, I'll like you for always. As long as I'm living, my baby you'll be. All parents know what Mary and Joseph were thinking those years ago. They weren't concerned with giving Jesus the latest toys. Instead, they wanted what all parents, and hopefully all adults, want for the children of the world. People to love them, to not want for shelter, food, and clothing, the chance to be educated and to better themselves, and to grow up to be loving, kind people who care for others. May you and those you hold dear love each other forever and like each other for always. Share that love this holiday season and all year round.
Now let us sing our first carol, Stand As You Are Able, Deck the Hall with Boughs of Holly, 235.
Season to be
When I was a boy, about 10 years old, I read the following passage from Luke. And as a 60-year-old, I read it with hopefully a little more wisdom, but the same innocence. And it came to pass in those days that there went out a decree from Caesar Augustus that all the world would be taxed. And Joseph also went up from Galilee into the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, to be taxed with Mary, his espoused wife, being great with child. And so it was that while they were there, the days were accomplished that she should be delivered. And she brought forth her firstborn son and wrapped him in swaddling clothes and laid him in a manger because there was no room for them in the inn. Now let us sing O Little Town of Bethlehem 247.
I'm going to begin this with a little historical geography lesson. The Pawnee people were located in what is today north central Kansas and south central, east central Nebraska for a number of years. And they were actually contested the buffalo hunting grounds in north central and northwest Kansas with the Kansa or Kansa tribe. So this story was told to an ethnologist by the name of George Bird Grinnell by a Pawnee elder. And it seems that there was a winter that was really cold and snowy. And the Pawnee, like they did every year, set out from their villages in what is today East Central Kansas and went, Nebraska, and they went west up the Platte River, and they found no buffalo. So they turned south and headed toward the Republican River, which joins with the Smoky Hill 25 miles east of here to form the Kansas River. And the people were really hungry, and the prairie was covered with snow, and it was very cold, and still no buffalo appeared. And the people grew weak, and they began to starve. Still, they persisted. They walked slowly to the south, looking for bison. And every morning, the young warriors would go to the top of the hills and look out across the prairie, looking to see if they could find the black herds of bison and the white snow, and they couldn't. And so finally, after many days of slowly marching south, they camped. And with the Pawnee at this time, there was this one particular lodge where there was a woman who had lost her husband to the attack by the Sioux, and then there were a boy and a girl, her son and daughter, and then there was a 16-year-old boy that they called Poor Boy, and Poor Boy lived with the family, and he always shared what he could what he could get from the hunts, but he couldn't. There was nothing to share, and Poor Boy had no family, and he grew really weak during this march, and finally they were reduced to eating boiled moccasins and robes. And then one morning the campsite began to pack up, and the women loaded up their travois. The story doesn't tell whether they're pulled by dogs or horses at this particular time. But and Poor Boy decided, you know, this is it. I'm not of any value to the people in my lodge, to the kind woman who has allowed me to live with her and her son and daughter. I'm going to just lie down here now and die. And so he put, as the Pawnee band moved out across the river and up the hills, he put the sticks on the embers of the campfire, and he warmed his hands one last time and warmed himself, and then he lay down and went to sleep. The next thing he knew, he was lying on his back. It was midday, and he was looking up toward the sun, and there were two spots up there, and the spots got larger and larger, and then he could see that they were birds, and they were gradually circling and lowering. And then when they came closer, he could see that they were swans. And the swans lit on the ground next to him, next to the fire. And they moved over to where he was. And they used their shoulders and pushed their wings under him and lifted him up. And he fell asleep. And they bore him aloft. The next thing he knew, he was awake, and it was a warmer place. and he felt a little stronger. He tried to get up once, twice. Finally, he arose and he saw this great lodge, tall, with beautiful, strange animals with the most magnificent colors that he had ever seen. So he kind of staggered into the opening of the lodge, and there was this great gathering of men there. And there were warriors and chiefs and what we'd refer to as medicine men. The Pawnee, the translation of of the spiritual leaders is usually the doctors. And they were gathered there, and in the middle there was this one very large, handsome man who had a very kind and gentle face, and he said, "Welcome, my son." And the poor boy looked around, and it was magnificent. All of these chiefs were clothed in white buckskin. The head chief, Ateus, which means my father, he actually wore a white buffalo robe. And so Ateus turns to one of the warriors and he says, "Give poor boy something to eat." So the warrior takes out a parflesh bag, which is this rawhide box, and he takes out a piece of dried meat and also a piece of fat, and about the size of two fingers together, and hands them to poor boy. And poor boy's thinking, "My gosh, I'm so hungry, and this is all they're going to give me." Okay, well, he eats, and he continues to eat, and he notices the more he eats, and the stronger he gets, the more nourishment he gets, that the meat doesn't get any smaller. So he's finally full. And then Ateus says, "Poor boy, I understand the suffering you've gone through. I understand the suffering of your people. I've been watching you. I will tell you what to do." So he does. And then he gives poor boy new clothing and new hunting weapons. And poor boy goes out to where outside of the lodge, and the warrior goes with him. The swans are out there, and poor boy essentially gets on their backs. The warrior comes up and presses his eyelids down, and he falls asleep. Next thing he knows, he's back at his campfire, except the fire's all burned out. The people are long gone. It's late afternoon, and so he's feeling strong. And in his new clothing, he runs. He knows where they have gone. He runs, and by night, he catches up to his camp. He goes to the village and walks into the lodge where the kind woman is, and she's there, and she's boiling the last piece of robe to make a soup. And she tells him, she's very surprised to see him, she tells him, "This is it, we'll starve after this." And poor boy sits down by the fire, and then he gets up and he walks out. And the next thing that the woman hears is this sound like a buffalo coughing just outside the lodge. And then the thump of something large hitting the snow. And poor boy comes back in and sits by the fire and says, "Go out and see." And so she goes out and hears this beautiful, sleek buffalo cow who has just been slain right outside the lodge. So she proceeds to, as the Pawnee women would, to butcher the animal, and she tells her son to go out to the friends and relatives in the campsite and bring them in the next morning, and they're going to have a feast. And so they do. There's so many people, the lodge can't contain them. They're standing outside, and then people turn to poor boy because they could see that he's dressed in a very different way now. and he seems to hold himself differently. And he tells the boy in the lodge, he says, run up to the top of the hill and tell me what you see. So the boy runs as fast as he can to the top of the bluff, and he looks out, and he doesn't see anything in all four directions but white snow, not a single buffalo. So he comes back into the campsite, says, I didn't see a thing. And poor boy says, run up there again and tell me what you see. So he runs up as fast as he can up to the top of the bluff, and he looks out on all across the landscape and sees nothing but snow. No game. So he comes back, and he reports this. So poor boy then has his robe, and he runs up to the top of the hill, and he looks out to the south, and as far as he can see, the prairie is covered black with bison in the deep snow. And the snow is so deep that the bison really have difficulty getting away. So he comes back to the village, and the warriors go out with their bows and arrows, and the women go behind with their knives, and they have a great hunt. And they're very successful. And they collect enough meat and robes to last until the summer hunt. And poor boy, who has these humble beginnings, goes on to be a great chief, and then finally the head chief of the Pawnees. Now, a lot of Pawnee stories don't have a real nice, neatly packaged ending, and that's the end of the story. There are a lot of points that can be made, and I'm going to just point out one thing that sticks here with me. That is that this takes place, this miraculous event, in a holy place. And that happens to be this place that we call Kansas. The Holy Land is not just in the Eastern Mediterranean. It is in this place that we dwell. That revelation and the magic of existence can transform our lives. So thank you for inviting me to share the passage of Poor Boy, a Pawnee folktale. Thank you.
Good evening. I'm here tonight to discuss a public awareness campaign that I started last month, and I'd like to discuss why I started it and the reasons I did and why I did when I did it. The public awareness campaign is to keep the wounded veterans in our nation's hearts and minds. The reason I started it is on Veterans Day, I got all the warm fuzzies from all of the well wishings from my friends and family wishing me a happy Veterans Day. And I appreciated all of that from them and everything else that they did. But I then asked them that maybe we needed to extend those good feelings to the next day and the day after that. For the wounded veterans. They don't really have much of a voice, and it's a very small part of our population. So with all that being said, let me just read the email that I sent out to all my friends and family. And I did this on the 12th of November, the day after Veterans Day. That's the name of the public awareness campaign. It's Veterans Day Plus One. So I'd like to thank all my friends, family, and friends of friends that paid tribute to all our military veterans yesterday. I'm always heartened by the small and large acts of kindness paid to present and former members of the military. With that being said, I'd like to remind everyone of the plight of so many of our veterans that have returned home suffering from injuries, both physical and mental. incurred during deployments in support of our nation's conflicts. While everyone applauds all service members, how many of us keep in mind those injured veterans in mind on 11/11 or any other day? They are out of sight for most of us, me included, and certainly out of mind most days. This is especially striking to me, given the fact that we have a Fort Riley next door, and still we see very few veterans and even fewer wounded veterans in our population, so it's easy for us to forget about them. With that in mind, I'd like to suggest extending the spirit of Veterans Day one more day. I'd ask everyone to do something with specific regard to our wounded soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines, and Coast Guard personnel. This can take any form. Simply keeping them in your thoughts, praying for them, be an advocate for them, get involved with helping them stand up for their rights, donate to a charitable organization that helps wounded vets, write your elected officials to ensure the needs of our wounded vets are not lost in the bureaucracy, whatever. It doesn't really matter what you do as long as you do something. At the very least, just pass the word that there is a need. There are very many conflicting numbers of wounded coming out of the Iraq and Afghanistan conflicts to give a valid, accurate count. And immediately after I published these numbers, I was flooded with numbers from other veterans giving me generally larger numbers. But let me just tell you what I did send. These numbers come from the Wounded Warriors Project, which a lot of you may have heard of. I hope you have. It seems as they're a pretty good organization. And this is valid as of the 1st of August of this year. So total wounded is a little over 51,000. Estimated traumatic brain injuries is 320,000. Estimated with PTSD is 400,000. And this is the number that's most under contention, the 400,000 PTSD. I've been told 500 and 600,000, and it's a tough number to nail down. When I read those, and I try to keep, being a veteran, I've always tried to keep the military in my thoughts and mind, in my thoughts, and pay attention to all of the numbers, good and bad. These are obviously the bad ones. And I was very surprised at the 400,000, honestly. Now, if you ask the Veterans Administration the numbers of those TBI or suffering PTSD, you're going to get a drastically different numbers and a lot lower, unfortunately. Figures related to other conflicts are even more difficult to pin down. We still have Korea, of course, and Vietnam, where we have a lot of veterans still amongst us, and then smaller conflicts, and they're very difficult to pin down those numbers. So some of our veterans aren't receiving the best care, and we've all heard, especially a few years ago, where it was taking 300, 400 days for an individual to even be seen for the first time after submitting their paperwork. And once they were given the paperwork, or I'm sorry, once they were being seen for the first time, that care may not have been the best care possible. And I'll relate something that was told to me by an author of a book. This is his second book, and the first book was him following troops to Iraq out of, I don't remember now what fort they were, down in the southeast somewhere. His second book was about them coming home. He's a straight shooter. He doesn't make up numbers just to make book sales. He's a Pulitzer Prize winner, not for this project, but for another one. So I think that he lends an air of credibility to this. If an individual goes for PTSD treatment on some Army base or Air Force or Marines or Navy, for that matter, they might be sent to one of three programs if it's deemed necessary, if they've been evaluated and they should go. They can either go for 4 weeks, for 7 weeks, or for 4 months. Well, what's the difference between that? You'd think that it was the amount of need, obviously. Well, no, it's actually just the vacancy that they have in any given program at any given time. So that's just the way it works. And also a little bit of where they're located in the United States. The four-month one is in California, so it'll take most of the people from the Western United States and send for that one. So anyway, again, it's, you know, it's a few weeks to a couple months to 4 months, and it really doesn't matter what the actual conditions are. That's it's very unfortunate. There's a lot of other examples, but that's, I think, the best one. So the idea behind this is just, again, to raise awareness. And I will, you'll hear a little bit more about this as time goes on. This is definitely in its infancy. It's not a charity, and it's not a business. It's just me trying to get the awareness out there. And again, it's just in its infancy. It's flying very low to the ground, but it'll take off hopefully soon. So finally, I'd ask everyone here to take a minute, an hour, a day, or make it a lifelong passion to remember and support our wounded veterans. It doesn't matter whether we see the wounds or not, nor does it matter when and where they served. They deserve a place in our hearts and minds, and they deserve our help. Thank you.
Moments of recent gratitude. William, seeing a man standing outside, holding a sign, homeless. Probably he is hungry. We have food. We have a bed. We can take him home, he says. I asked William if I could share this. With some thought, he said sure, but that he didn't remember it, because to him it was not an extraordinary thought. It just made sense. Christmas card from my mother reading, "We could not be prouder." Stuck. Cannot get up the hill. Cannot get into the parking lot at the bottom. Stuck sideways in the middle of the drive, crying outside, hiding. Wishing for a moment there was another person to call, someone who had to care. Sending children up the hill to the house. Destiny doubles back. I realize as we embrace for a hug. "We will get through this, Mama," she says. My child had a dream that we were separated and couldn't find one another. Being able to say, "I am yours and you are mine and nothing can ever change that."
Now let us sing the first Noel 237. of the Silver Linings Playbook said this: "Nothing is really a cliche when you really, really do it from the heart. And if you feel it, and it's real, and you know people who have felt it, there is nothing cliched about it. Please, really give from the heart."
Thanks for being patient with us. Good evening. Our RE children and our teachers have worked hard to put together a puppet performance for you that incorporates some of what we've learned this year in our world religions classes and also some of the tolerance that we all believe in here at our fellowship. So, without further ado, we present to you an original UUFM script, A Holiday to Remember.
Our cast has all bustled and hustled themselves to a small airport in the American Midwest in the middle of winter, 8 days before the turn of the solar year. Why would logical people do this, when Mother Nature, Father Sky, and weather phenomena have all been so dicey, so icy? Every person tries to be in control. Outside forces know better, and it begins to snow.
Wind. I come from the cold and stormy north. With a rush and a roar, I hurry forth. Swift I come and swift away, with you for long I cannot stay. Frost. Upon each window pane I trace the finest film with glistening lace. My breath flows cold, joy and delight follow my silvery sparkles bright. Snow. Over the earth so bare and brown, I spread a robe as soft as down. Drifting, drifting down through space, resting with love on each place. Ice. Gleaming, glistening, sparkling, yet pure and clear and bright, you'll find me neath a silver moon on a crisp, fresh winter night.
With nowhere to go and all the inns full, what will happen next? Our first scene takes us into an airplane, delayed on the runway while the storm rages on.
Welcome aboard the North Pole Airlines. I am Sant A. Clues, and I will be your festivity leader.
This guy is clearly bonkers. He doesn't realize that he's just the flight attendant.
Our sleigh will be delayed due to some wintry weather, so we may be sitting here for a while. I'm happy to lead you in some Christmas carols while we wait. Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way.
Excuse me, sir, but I don't celebrate Christmas. I would much rather meditate quietly and enjoy the peacefulness of the season.
What do you mean you don't celebrate Christmas? Everyone celebrates Christmas.
I don't celebrate Christmas. In my family, we celebrate Kwanzaa.
We already celebrated Hanukkah at my house. Can we sing my song? Dreidel, 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 I made it out of clay.
Oh dear, when are we ever going to take off so we can see our families?
Inside the airport, all flights were delayed for the night, and everyone was encouraged to make themselves as comfortable as possible. It was late, and a large group of people were gathering at the only open restaurant at the food court. The young man behind the counter, Joseph, was struggling to take orders and prepare food. He made an announcement to the next 10 or 15 people in line.
Yeah. if everyone in line can just agree to have a bacon cheeseburger, I can make a bunch at once and everybody will get their food faster.
I'm a Hindu. I cannot eat beef.
I'm a Muslim and I can't eat pork.
Joseph hung his head. It had been a good idea. His co-workers scheduled to work the next shift had arrived and heard what had just happened. He was glad to have their help, but even with them there, he wasn't sure they could feed everyone in line before people started to get angry.
If only everyone was the same, no special diets or anything, it would be so much easier. But I know that's not fair. Mary, what do you think?
We can do this, but we can't do it from back here. We need to go out together, talk to people, and try to get organized. Hey, Seuss, what are your ideas?
I don't know if I have any ideas yet. If we could just get these people to make their orders simpler, then we could get them all fed.
Joseph took a deep breath and went out to face the crowd. It felt weird to be on the other side of the counter. The two people who had said they couldn't eat what he offered were talking, and he expected them to be frustrated with him and act offended. He was pretty sure he was about to feel really stupid, but he went straight to the people and said,
I'm sorry my idea didn't work for you. I'm still trying to figure out how to feed everyone.
No, you were right to try. Let's think about this together.
Great idea. Let's all work together. Maybe we'll get to eat sometime before our flights arrive.
Meanwhile, there is chaos inside the airplane.
Oh. Can everyone please be quiet? Your songs are really lovely, but not all at the same time. What should we do about it?
I'm sorry, everyone, but it looks like this storm is getting worse. Don't worry, I won't sing you any more Christmas songs.
What if we taught each other our songs?
I would like that. We can still enjoy each other's traditions, even if we don't celebrate all the different holidays.
What a lovely idea!
I can't wait to learn some new songs. I get to go first. Oh, the weather outside is frightful.
Meanwhile, back in the airport, Joseph's volunteers made the first announcements.
There is enough food here to feed everyone, but we must be organized. Find a way to share. And there are only a few people who work to prepare and serve everything.
Can everyone form into groups? And can the children make some signs?
This is not a competition. Think of each other. Anyone with small kids or a health problem, go to the front of the line. The second group should be anyone else who is really hungry. Please gather over by the fountain. The third group should be the people who feel like they can wait. Go relax in the lounge. We'll come get you as soon as we can.
You three, say you've worked in the kitchen before. Could you come up with some... with a wise solution that would work with everyone's diets?
Jesus, Mary, and Joseph worked hard that whole Christmas Eve.
Joseph learned that he could not make everyone happy, but he could make everyone feel welcome. At the front of the line, everyone was tired but smiling.
Mary learned that people are willing to give to others, especially if they understood why. Their stomachs grumbled, but their laughter echoed.
Jesus learned that he didn't have to have all the answers to solve a problem. Explaining a problem, asking for help, and working hard proved to be enough today.
The group in the lounge shared stories of holidays together. Holidays in spring, summer, fall, and winter. Holidays long ago, and hopes for holidays in the future. A member of the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship in Manhattan sat among them and said,
there are so many principles at work here, like treating each other with worth and dignity. I see equity and compassion, and I feel so peaceful. This is a holiday to remember. Happy holidays!
All right. Before everything disassembles, let's sing Angels We Have Heard on High 231. Let's sing two verses. Yes. 231. All right. That went to two. Good try. All right. So I have a story that took place long, long time ago in a place called Sweden. A long time ago in Granumsdal, Sweden, on Christmas Eve, the Berman family was preparing for a Christmas festival. Everything had to be clean, in order, prepared just right. The coffee bread, the cookies, the cakes, all had to be perfect. The tablecloths, irons, plenty of wood had to be ready for the wood stove and the kakalunga. A cold winter, the north wind howled with hunger, bringing down the wolves and lynxes to the south, hunting for something to eat. All the Berman children were busy helping their mother, Elsa, and their father, Ulle. The eldest, Frederick, was splitting wood. Amma was helping braid the coffee cake. And Anna was sprinkling sugar on the cookies. And Olga was sweeping up. And Ella was trying to help her mother. And she was putting the best dishes out. And she dropped one, and it broke. And Elsa, who had so much on her mind, just flew into a fury and said, "Ella, get out of here. I need to concentrate." And so Ella went to her eldest brother and said, "Can I help you cut wood?" And he said, "No, you cannot help cut wood. You're too young. Alma, can I help you braid the coffee cake?" "Oh, no, no, no. You are too young." And then she went to Anna. "I can certainly sprinkle some sugar on the cookies." "Nay, du kan inte." "And Olga, you can't help me sweep." So she went outside to her father, who was in the barn. And there was the family cow, and he was milking it so they could have thick, rich cream. But she was afraid of that cow, because that cow had kicked her in the knee once, and it hurt for a month. So she didn't want to go into the barn. So she took the path that went by the apple orchard, past the field where they planted potatoes in the spring, and down to the river where she was always told, "You cannot go there alone. You cannot go there alone. You have to be with someone older." But she had a special rock that she knew was safe. And she sat on the rock, and she listened to the river And the river listened to her as she told the river, "Oh, I wish I was older so I could help, so I could be important, so people would recognize me and ask me to do something. I want to do something." She closed her eyes and she started to cry. And she thought, "Oh, I wish my mama were here. That's my grandmother. She died when the first leaves started to fall. So she had no more mormor. No one to hold her on her lap and wrap her in her big arms and tell her stories from her mother and her grandmother. She said to the river, "Oh, I miss my mormor so much." And she just started to cry and cry. She closed her eyes and wished that she had a grandmother that would hold her and tell her stories. And the snow started to fall, and she put her tongue out. Oh, the tingle of the snow felt so good and fresh on her tongue. And then she started to dream, and she could see things that she'd never seen before. And then she all of a sudden heard, "Oh!" A wolf was in the woods. She panicked. She jumped up. The snow was falling so hard she couldn't even see her hand. So she went that way, and then she went this way, and then she went that way. She didn't know what to do. She was lost. She couldn't see. It was getting really cold. The snow was just pounding against her as if it was a furious, furious monster. And she ran, and she ran, and she ran right into the river. And she fell down, and she hit her head on a rock. And she screamed. And the next thing she knew, she woke up. "Where am I? Where is this?" she wondered. And she was in a little house called a torp, a one-room house with a fireplace, a table, and a bed next to the fire. And she was sitting on that bed, and she saw the witch. The witch by the fire, and she started screaming, "Oh no, it's the witch! The witch, she's going to kill me! She's going to get me! She's..." And the lady turned around. She goes, "What is the matter with you?" And she went over to the little girl, and the little girl looked into her eyes, and they sprinkled like the snow and the moonlight. And she had big red rosy cheeks and a big smile. She goes, "You don't look like a witch." She goes, "I'm not a witch." And the little girl said, "Why does everyone call you a witch then?" Oh, people are sometimes rather stupid. "Just because I come from way up north and I'm a Sami, I'm a reindeer person. My people herd reindeer. They take care of reindeer. They follow them up and down the tundra. And then I met Johan, and I married him, and I came down south, and my life has never been the same." "Oh, so you're not a witch. But then why do you sing such crazy songs?" "Oh," she said, the woman, "oh, those are yoik. And yoik, those are the songs of the ancestors. Those are the songs you sing when you are lost. Those are the songs you sing when you want to talk to the sky or the mountains or anything that is important. You talk to the universe, and the universe talks back to you. And I yoik, because it's the time I remember when I was loved." And the girl looked at her. And then she looked down and she saw that she didn't have her clothes on. And she said, "Whose clothes are these?" "Oh, they are Katrina's." She says, "Who's Katrina?" And the woman said, "Oh, she was my daughter." And she goes, "Where is your daughter?" "She died 25 years ago with my husband. in the influenza epidemic. So I have been alone in this little house for these many years. You are wearing my daughter's clothes. Oh, she said, your daughter's clothes. You look sad. She goes, I am a bit sad. It's hard to lose your daughter and your husband. And then she says, oh, we must go now. We must take you back to the house. So she wrapped Ella up in warm woolen woven blankets and carried her down the path by the potato field through the orchard, and they could hear the whole family yelling, Ella! Ella! Wem erde? Wem erde? Where are you? Where are you? Ella, come home! Come home! Come home! And she saw them with lanterns looking in the woods and down by the river. And then the old woman said, Ella is here, I have her. And they brought her into the house. And Ella said, I have a new grandma, and you will welcome her. You will feed her. She will come to our Christmas feast. And Elsa was so surprised. She goes, who gives you the right to tell us who can come to our Christmas feast? She goes, I do. So that's the story of how a young child can lead the adults from fear of someone who is different, who comes from a different place, and finds that love in the end is what helps us heal from loss and brings us full circle so that we can bring more people into our lives. So let us do that this day and all the days forward with the wounded veterans, the foster care children who become children in families that are adopted and whole, and for all the families here and people that you know, and the Pawnee, all life. Let us extend that love. Let us do our best. And now, a musical offering. Now let us stand and sing Silent Night, Holy Night, 251. And at the end of the third verse, we will turn the lights off, and children will come to the end of the row to help you light your candles. And as your candles are lit, share your candle from person to person so that everyone in your row gets a candle that's lit. And then as the candles are lit, would you, the back rows, come forward and put them in the bowls. And as you put the candle in the bowl, make a wish for yourself, your family, or for someone in need. So let us sing. May we all be blessed with the light that keeps us safe and warm, that allows us to see our way from moment to moment, from day to day, with increasing hope for helping to build a world in which love is at the center, where love does its good work, and we are servants of its beauty and its goodness. May we take this peace and beauty into our hearts and into the night and share it with all that we meet. Go in peace, go in joy, go in love. Thank you.
Merry Christmas. Thank you.